Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Welcome to Northwood Technical College, formerly known as WITC.
An area educational institution gets a new name.
While our name has changed, our mission has not.
Is it the latest example of cancel culture or just clearing up confusion? Plus, Douglas County is also considering a new name. That's Douglas County, Oregon.
We feel like we have a more interesting and better Douglas that our county could be named after.
Then, their voices brought them together. Then they added a multitude of instruments. We'll hear the unique sound of Moores and McCumber. Those stories and a regional news and review after this.
Sometimes you're on the right side.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Welcome to Northwood Technical College, formerly known as WITC.
An area educational institution gets a new name.
While our name has changed, our mission has not.
Is it the latest example of cancel culture or just clearing up confusion? Plus, Douglas County is also considering a new name. That's Douglas County, Oregon.
We feel like we have a more interesting and better Douglas that our county could be named after.
Then, their voices brought them together. Then they added a multitude of instruments. We'll hear the unique sound of Moores and McCumber. And later in the show, the regional news and review. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So here's a geography question. What did George Washington see when he looked over northern Minnesota from Wisconsin? All right, it's a trick question. And no, George Washington is not known to have ever visited the Great Northwest, as it was called then. A better way of asking it is, when you look at a map showing the outline of the Wisconsin-Minnesota border, can you see the profile of our first president with his trademark bent nose and pursed lips? Well, no one asked me what it looked like, and I always did think it was George Washington, but instead, the area was named for the likeness of a stereotypical Native American, which is where we get the name Wisconsin Indian Head region. That's been true for decades, but perhaps coincidentally, just as the nation and the world catch up with the racial reckoning following the death of George Floyd, it's being reevaluated, at least by one of the main institutions bearing the name. This week, the Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College officially changed its name to Northwood Technical College, and with it, its logo and mascot. With us to tell us about it is Northwood Tech's president, John Will. Welcome to Simply Superior, John.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So did you see George Washington, by the way?
You know,
or can you see him now that I pointed him out?
That analogy is new to me, but As you were talking through that, I had to chuckle that's what you saw. So thanks for sharing that.
Sure. So this didn't happen overnight. You know, it's been in the works for a bit.
It has. About every 10 years, we actually review our branding. And we were due to do that a couple of years ago. And we began that process with a market research project to see how people perceive the college. And that's really what led us to the point that we're at as of Monday this week, to changing our name to Northwood Technical College.
Mm-hmm. So this precedes the, as I put it, the racial reckoning following the death of George Floyd last year.
It did. Actually, what we were interested in studying was more the perception of the college. And sometimes when we do that, we do things like change our tagline or logo. And this time, what we found kind of more generally is that the recognition of the term Indian Head has been declining, especially among younger people, which of course is our target market. And there were some other issues that created brand confusion, and we felt like it was a good time to pursue an opportunity to change the name.
Mm-hmm. So for anyone who would call this part of cancel culture, are they barking up the wrong tree? Or
I think it would be accurate to say that this was not the result of any group or any broad effort or set of complaints about our name. Mm-hmm. This was more related to trying to to make people understand who we were and what key services we offered. And then honestly, to make us feel a little bit more modern. And I can give you some examples of what the research results were if you're interested in that.
Sure.
We found that about a quarter of people associated our name with a tribal college. That might touch on your opening a little bit. And we did a scientific random sample survey and had more than 1,500 respondents. And so that just represents some brand confusion that we thought we could potentially correct. And then when we were surveying people outside of the district from across the border in Minnesota in particular, about one in five people associated the acronym with WITC, which we use as our short name, with a radio station. And so, again, that's problematic when you're trying to communicate services and products that you offer. Mm-hmm. And more generally, about half of the groups that we surveyed viewed the name as more out of date than modern. And that led us to the decision that we really needed to go farther than the logo and tagline this time, and we needed to really think about changing the name of the college so that it was more clear.
Part of it is a mascot, and you don't actually have an athletic program. So did you have a mascot before or not?
We didn't, but I love this question. We're really excited to have a mascot. Based on student feedback, we selected a bear as our mascot, Blaze the Bear. And what we do have is a lot of students who compete very competitively in skills competitions, such as carpentry or people are familiar with Business Professionals of America. And so instead of recognizing athletes, as you might see at a university with athletics, we'll be recognizing students who achieve at high levels in skills competitions and in other ways. And just more generally, it's kind of a fun factor, I think, for a college to have a mascot.
I'm wondering if you have a college radio station, because it seems to me the call letters should be WITC, right?
Yeah, no, we don't have a radio station.
We'll have to work on that with Wisconsin Public Radio for you here. We're speaking with John Will. He's the president of Northwood Technical College, or Northwood Tech for short, formerly known as Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College. So you've got Northwood, but not Northwoods.
Well, we had two different versions of that. First, I can just speak a little bit to the selection of the name somewhat generally. We had a public process where people could suggest names, and we had over 180 submissions. And then we winnowed that down, got it to 10, and then ended up landing on a version of Northwoods or Northwood.
And so you open the door here. What were some of those others in the top 10?
Lakewood was one of the names. Riverwood Technical College was another name. And so generally what we found is that something having to do with nature, and often something having to do with being in the northern part of both the country and the state of Wisconsin, those two themes were pretty consistent.
So the area is still referred to as the Wisconsin Indian Head region. I just drove across the state and saw signs saying that. Do you know if any changes are happening with that?
Well, I can give you a little bit of history on that, because I grew up in one of the rural communities in the area, Ladysmith. And so as I grew up, the Indian Head name applied to a lot of businesses and different organizations throughout the area. And it got its roots in an attempt to define a tourism region in the state of Wisconsin. And there still is a tourism group that is organized around that name.
Mm-hmm. And the college itself, am I correct that it was once WITI?
Yeah, that's a really interesting. We have a really interesting name history. In 1912, more than 100 years ago, the leaders in the city of Superior created the second vocational school in Wisconsin, and it was named the Industrial Commercial Continuing Evening School. And
say that three times fast.
Yeah, that was a pretty difficult to say name as well. And then people will probably recall, and kind of fast forwarding to the 70s, was Wisconsin Indian Head Vocational, Technical, and Adult Education District.
Okay, that makes what you just said sound short.
It does. And then it became WITI, or Wisconsin Indian Head Technical Institute, and then Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, and finally the change that we're making now to Northwood Technical College. So there's been several name changes, and the campuses have had various names over time too. For example, in Superior, that was, some people recall, graduating from Superior Technical Institute. So this is, as the college has evolved and as services have changed, and before it was even a college, I should say that, the name has been modified several times.
Mm-hmm. And never George Washington Tech, correct?
Nope, never. I don't think that has been part of the history.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with John Will. He's the president of Northwood Technical College, or Northwood Tech, as it's called now for short, formerly known as Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, and as we just learned, many other names. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So as you just heard, the change of Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College to Northwood Tech was underway before the racial reckoning of 2020 and the nationwide reevaluation of names that may be deemed offensive or inappropriate. But what about Douglas County? Well, its name for Stephen A. Douglas, the Illinois senator made famous in the 1856 Lincoln-Douglas debates in which he supported keeping slavery. Douglas again faced Lincoln 4 years later in the presidential race of 1860. That time, Abraham Lincoln won, of course, leading to the Civil War, and Douglas, however well-intentioned, decidedly on the wrong side of history. Now there's an effort to rename various places named for Douglas, with a fairly low-intensity solution being to rename them for Frederick Douglass, the black statesman and abolitionist. Frederick Douglass spelled his name with two S's instead of one, meaning maps, signs, and stationery would have to be slightly redone. One place considering a change is Douglas County, and by that I mean Douglas County, Oregon, not Wisconsin. Here from Douglas County, Oregon, to tell us about their naming battles is Ken Carlani, an advocate for the name change, but not for who you may think.
We would like the Douglas, Oregon County Commissioners to change the name from Stephen A. Douglas to honor David Douglas, the famous Scottish explorer who came through what is now Douglas County in the 1820s. He had good relations with the local Indians. He referred to them as his friends. He spoke highly of them in terms of their kindness and generosity. And so we thought, well, that's the perfect Douglas. You know, of course.
Well, can I interrupt there? Because
sure.
I read a little bit further on this, and he's the person for whom the Douglas fir tree is named, correct?
The Douglas fir is, in fact, named for him. And many of the species names of plants, you know, Iris douglasiana and Cretigus douglasii, are named after him. So he advanced technical botany for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a capable young fellow. Unfortunately, met his demise just a couple of years later in Hawaii at the age of 31. Fell into a boar pit with a boar in it, and that was the end of David Douglas.
Oh, dear.
But he was quite a brilliant botanist. He was from very humble means, but people recognized his ability, wealthier folks, and who educated him and sent him off to the New World to find new and interesting plants for English gardens.
So what's wrong with Stephen A. Douglas?
Well, Stephen A. Douglas got a lot of counties named after him because he was an advocate of expanding states, of forming new states in what were the territories at the time. And he was the Douglas that debated Lincoln over slavery, of course, the famous Lincoln-Douglas debates. So Douglas was trying to appease the slave states by making sure that every other state that entered into the Union was either slave or non-slave. So that's his history. And we feel like we have a more interesting and better Douglas that our county could be named after in the person of David Douglas, the famous botanist explorer who came through this area in the 1820s.
How about Frederick Douglass?
That certainly came up, but we felt like Frederick Douglass had, as far as we know, pretty much absolutely no connection to Oregon at all, let alone the southern part of the state here. And I think the most important part of the story where David Douglas is concerned is his warm relations with the Native Americans in the area here.
So what's the status of the resolution?
Well, it's in a holding pattern right now because, you know, as the pandemic kicked in, I mean, certainly Black Lives Matter, you know, kicked in as well at about the same time. And that's kind of when we began to really think about it. I mean, it's a kind of conversation that we've kicked around for years. And then finally, I wrote up a resolution that I would like the county commissioners to sign. But we're just kind of looking for a little bit of a quiet, sort of an untumultuous time to kind of introduce this. Of course, our county is surging in, COVID deaths and right. As is much of the nation. So we're just kind of trying to pick a good time to do it that we think, will allow folks to really focus on the issue.
Right. And I take it one of the impetus behind it, or part of it, is that this would be a low-intensity change. You're changing Douglas to Douglas, and since you're even Frederick, you don't even have to add the extra S.
Yep. It truly is the kind of a thing that a stroke of a pen, and that's it. Not another dime needs to get spent. No signs need to be changed. Same, no extra S has to be added. All it is the willingness of the commissioners to do the right thing and recognize the right person. I don't see there necessarily being a whole lot of politics associated with this, really. It's just doing the right thing.
All right. We've been speaking with Ken Carlone of Roseburg, Oregon. He's an advocate for the name change of Douglas County, Oregon to Douglas County, Oregon, but for a different Douglas. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
So while Ken Carlone waits for the right moment to really pursue his Douglas County name change, he might take a page from the younger generation. Dawn Wilson is the mother of one young activist who, with his peers, pulled off a similar name change for Douglas Park in Chicago, adding an S and naming it for Frederick Douglass. So Dawn Wilson, how did that happen?
Yes, you're correct, except one thing. The name was updated to Frederick and Anna Douglas because his wife had a lot to do with who he became.
I stand corrected.
So the students at Village Leadership Academy, each classroom focused on a grassroots campaign. And basically, the idea is to have students identify problems in their community that they can make a difference in changing. And so it started off with, I believe it was the fifth grade class that wanted to change the name. It was a playground. That's what they initially wanted to do. However, they got some pushback from the alderman, and the alderman was like, but you could consider doing something like a park or so. And so that's when they started doing research around that. And they found out that Douglas Park was named after Stephen Douglas. And then they pretty much campaigned to change the name by just adding an S. And so this campaign started at fifth grade from one class, moved on to sixth grade, and then the class that was in the fourth grade that was going to the fifth grade took over, and it took them a total of 4 years to get that completed. I may be getting the grades mixed up because, my son just graduated, but it started a year before him. So sure. He's been in the campaign for 3 years.
Were they frustrated during that time?
So interestingly, they were not discouraged because they created what they called rejection circles. So within these rejection circles, they stand around and they encounter different people rejecting them. So they got used to hearing the rejection.
So what made the difference in the end? How did the officials, and I think it was the Chicago Park District, what made them finally give in or accede the light?
I think the children were like, Oh, they thought we were just some cute little kids and had to do a little class project that they wasn't going to see us again. And so when they kept coming back, meeting after meeting, these children are really serious. And so I think that's probably the turning point, more or less, is because they realized that this wasn't a little class project. This was a movement. They got over 5,000 names, petitioned, and also a documentary was done with these kids as well.
Okay. And your son's name?
Zahir Bang.
And lastly, one more time, the name of the park, because it's not just Frederick Douglass Park.
Right. Frederick and Anna Douglass. With two S's.
Great. We've been speaking with Dawn Wilson from Chicago. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, the music of Moores and McCumber.
When you've been knocked down, punched in the chest, and it's hard to breathe. Well, you were so in love, you gave it your best, now it's time to leave. And now you're all alone on a tarnished throne, and wondering how. Start asking yourself, what would love do now?
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. What do you get when you put together some guitars, a ukulele, a couple of mandolins, a pair of bouzoukis, an accordion, harmonica, an upright and electric bass, and maybe someone on drums? Well, give those instruments to one guy from Superior and another from Colorado, and you have Moores and McCumber, two singer-songwriters who got together initially because of the meshing of their voices, and then added a multitude of musical instruments for what's become their trademark sound. Local folks had a chance to hear and see them switch up their instruments last week when the pair played at the historic Scott House in Carlton, Minnesota, and now they join us on the air. Welcome to Simply Superior, James and Court.
Thanks for having us,
Robin. How are you? Good to be here.
So, which came first, all your variety of instruments or your partnership? I'm thinking that you got together and said, we need a few hundred more instruments.
Well, I think when we started, this is James, I was playing guitar mostly, exclusively writing and singing on guitar, and Court was playing a few of the instruments that he plays, but he grew up playing instruments, piano and cello and stuff like that, and that quickly developed into a whole menagerie of instruments. And what would you say about that, Court?
Well, I think, I was playing a bunch of instruments, but we both were touring solo singer-songwriters, and the partnership really kind of blossomed first when we started singing with each other. That was really the kicker, and then writing songs. The instruments, I always had that in my back pocket, but what we did was once we started writing together, I just like to color certain songs with what the lyrics and how the melody vibe is kind of moving me. And I like to color that with different instruments. That's when I started bringing the cello and the keyboard and just to color it in a way that would make it more exciting.
And I missed the cello, by the way, in my introduction there. So if there's anything else I left off, we could add them in as accompaniment as we go along. What brought you two together?
I think just the admiration for each other's musicianship and songwriting abilities and the fact that, like, the very first time that we sang together, which was around a campfire with a bunch of other singer-songwriters, we happened to meet at a folk festival in Lyons, Colorado called the Rocky Mountain Folks Fest. You know, there's this thing that can happen with a couple of voices just once in a while where they just match up so, I won't say perfectly, but near perfect, and it just gives you chills, and we had that right from the beginning. So I think we felt like, wow, we should sing together a little bit more. And then we started playing shows together, and we realized it was much more interesting to the audience and to ourselves, ultimately, than it was to be playing solo.
Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between, I mean, there's got to be, right, live performance and switching up the instruments and studio work where you could each be like Prince, right? And he played something like 27 instruments on each of his albums.
Live to pull it off, to keep everything in tune. That's probably the hardest thing, especially playing any kind of outdoor gigs, and that's what's been mostly this summer since, pandemic and But so that's a challenge. In a studio, it's actually, you have to be careful not to get too carried away, really, because it's easy to play every single thing you know how to play on a certain song. And the other thing in the studio, which, you know, I think some people get caught up in, I have for sure in the past, is you then try to play some stuff that maybe you shouldn't and don't really know how to play. But since you can do as many takes as you want, you think you can pull something off. But we're getting better about making sure that it's the right instrument for the right song and the right guys playing it.
So you've relaxed on the tuba, I take it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Woodwinds are out.
I can't bring everything.
We are speaking with Superior resident, longtime Superior resident, James Moores, and his playing partner, Court McCumber, of the duo Moores and McCumber. They just played the historic Scott House in Carlton, Minnesota. So one of your instruments that both of you play, at least according to the roster I was given, is the bouzouki. And I have to say, the most I had heard about the bouzouki until recently, and I'm going to tell you what I heard recently, but was the Monty Python skit about the cheese shop, which doesn't have any cheese, but it does have a bouzouki player, until the customer tells them to shut up. Actually, are you familiar with that? I got to ask.
I have heard people say that to us. That's the only time that they've seen a bouzouki or heard a bouzouki. I have heard people say that. That is a hoot.
That's a new one for me. I'm going to have to go investigate, do some research.
You know what? We're going to very quickly make that easy for everybody. All right, here's a quick clip of the bouzouki from Monty Python's cheese skit.
Myself a little fermented curd will do the trick, so I curtailed my wool-pulling activities, sallied forth and entered your place of purveyance to negotiate the vending of some cheesy comestibles.
Come again?
I want to buy some cheese.
Oh, sorry. I thought you had come to complain about the bouzouki player.
Oh, heavens a bit. Hello, I'm one who delights in all manifestations of the Terpsichorean muse. Oh. Now then, my good man. Some cheese, if you please.
Okay, now that we got that out of the way. So, the next time I heard about a bouzouki was by Fuzzy Samuels, and he was the bass player on Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Ohio. And we visited with him, and he's been on the show. And he indeed, one of his instruments is a bouzouki, and he really gets into it. So tell me, what in the world got you guys introduced to this, and what exactly is it?
Well, this is Court speaking. I love Fuzzy Samuels, probably one of my favorite bass players, from listening to him on Stephen Stills' Manassas record, and I did not know that bouzouki was part of his repertoire, so that makes me like him even more. But I first heard the Irish bouzouki as Tim O'Brien was playing the same place that James and I met, the Rocky Mountain Folk Fest. This would have been early 2000s. And I was like, I love string instruments. So I was always learning new instruments, and I wanted to find one of those. And luckily, the next week, I found one in Boulder. I picked it up and just taught myself how to play it. What really shapes my playing, too, has been all of our trips to Ireland, because that's really the only times I've heard it is in Irish traditional music, and which is a little bit interesting because bouzouki is a Greek instrument. Irish musicians brought it back to Ireland. They couldn't come up with a new name for it, so they just called it the Irish bouzouki.
James, can you top that story? It's on your list of repertoire, too.
Well, I learned it from Court, so his story is my story. I'm just one generation behind him.
All right. Well, having talked about the bouzouki, perhaps you've got a selection from the album that features one?
We have a song called The Messerin that had some Irish bouzouki in it, actually by one of our friends that plays in a band called The Fiddle Case from County Clare. So he's playing bouzouki on that, and it's a wonderful song.
All right. Well, we're speaking with James Moores and Court McCumber of the duo Moores and McCumber, and here is The Mess We're In.
Standing stone in a desperate field, a solitary space for your soul to heal. A Celtic cross to remember you by, and a fine soft day helps a man to cry. The mess we're in, the mess we're in. Well, it all comes down to sink or swim. With the mess we're in, it's a mess we're in. Connemara ponies on a craggy old shore, and a cottage made of stone with a weathered sturdy door. There's time to read and time to write. I may even remember how to sleep at night. The mess we're in, the mess we're in. Well, it all comes down to sink or swim. With the mess we're in, it's a mess we're in. There'll be a time and place for that. For now, I've got to keep it under my hat. The mess we're in, the mess we're in. Well, it all comes down to sink or swim. With the mess we're in, it's a mess we're in. We're in, it's a mess we're in. The tide rolls in, the tide rolls out. There ain't that much left to talk about. And you've set anchor and I'm set to swim and leave behind the mess we're in. The mess we're in, the mess we're in. Well, it all down to sink or swim. With the mess we're in, it's a mess we're in. There'll be a time and place for that. For now, you gotta keep it under your hat. The mess we're in, the mess we're in. Well, it all comes down to sink or swim. With the mess we're in, it's a mess we're in. Yeah, it all comes down to sink or swim. With the mess we're in, it's a mess we're in.
And that was The Mess We're In by Moores and McCumber. And we are speaking with James Moores and his playing partner, Kurt McCumber. So another one of your instruments is the accordion, which Kurt plays. Now, James, I got to ask, have you taken Kurt to the Accordion Museum in Superior?
Yes. Yes, Kurt has been. He has toured the facility.
So you've met Helmy.
Yes, I have. I knew that it was the right fit when James lived in Superior, and then I was walking around one day, and I was like, there's an accordion museum. Wow, this is perfect. I do think it's interesting.
There is the accordion museum, yes.
When we play in Wisconsin and Minnesota, I think people see the accordion, they think of a very different style of accordion playing than what I'm doing. Just because we don't play polka music, but I do carry around an accordion, so there is that.
Well, and, you know, to anybody who's been to the museum, it's quite clear with I think they have like 10,000 accordions there, that the instrument is quite versatile and it's not just polka music.
Absolutely.
Now, is that because people have surrendered their accordions to the facility, or are they actually displaying them?
You know, we've done a show, and I think it's time for us to do another one there so we can get into those details. But enough about that. How about another selection? And it doesn't have to have an accordion in it, but if you got one you want to show off, tell us about it.
How about we play What Would Love Do Now?
All right. And here's What Would Love Do Now by Moores & McCumber.
When you've been knocked down, punched in the chest, and it's hard to breathe. Well, you were so in love, you gave it your best, now it's time to leave. And now you're all alone on a tarnished throne, and wondering how. Start asking yourself, what would love do now? What would love do now, when the skies are all gray? What would love do now, when you're trying to find your way? Through the middle of the night, sleep your mind will not allow. Start asking yourself, what would love do now? When you hit rock bottom, do you come back up? What would love do now? Or do you linger a while in the deep end? What would love do now? And when you're telling yourself that the weight of the water feels good somehow, what would love do now? Start asking yourself, what would love do now? What would love do now, when the skies are all gray? What would love do now, when you're trying to find your way? Through the middle of the night, sleep your mind will not allow. Start asking yourself, what would love do now? What would love do now? Darkest and your feet get cold, what would love do now? And when you tell yourself that you're getting old, what would love do now? And when the going gets tough, wipe the sweat from your brow. What would love do now? Keep asking yourself, what would love do now? What would love do now, when the skies are all gray? What would love do now, when you're trying to find your way? Through the middle of the night, sleep your mind will not allow. Keep asking yourself, what would love do now? Yeah, keep asking yourself, what would love do now? What would love, love, love?
And that was What Would Love Do Now by Moores & McCumber. So one more song to take us out. This time it doesn't have to have any particular instrument attached to it.
Well, maybe we should end with the title track, Survival, and let everybody know that the album's going to be out in October, and they can pre-save on Spotify and iTunes and all that good stuff if they go to mooresandmccumber.com.
I was just going to ask you, mooresandmccumber.com, we'll even spell it for you, right? Moores and McCumber, MCCUMBER.com. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Robin.
Sometimes you're on the right side, sometimes you're in the dark. Oh, 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 oh. Comes at you from the TV set, comes at you from the friends that you never met. Oh, 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 oh. What you need is love, a chance to rest your mind. Love's working overtime. Survival, survival. Oh, 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 oh. Reaching out with a helping hand.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, that haze is still in the sky. What's it doing to us, and when's it going away?
Yes, well, it's the result of massive Canadian wildfires up about 150 miles north of Minnesota on the Manitoba-Ontario border. So millions of acres have burned and, you know, rain has been scarce. Drought conditions that have affected the Midwest, the American West, have also affected Canada. And that smoke has just been pouring into Minnesota and Wisconsin and the rest of the nation, really. Causing some record low air quality. Some alerts have been lifted in the state as of now, but the fires continue to burn. And then on the, closer to the border, there are some fires in Quetico Provincial Park, which is just across from the Boundary Waters in Minnesota. So they're watching those fires. Some new ones have sprung up. Really, you know, what Canadian fire officials told me is we have bigger fish to fry. We can't be looking at these small fires along the border, but we've got folks mobilized from around the country in Minnesota now watching in case those fires jump across the lakes and threaten our pristine wilderness.
All right. Well, speaking of things that aren't going away or are coming back, mask wearing is back with us again. What are we supposed to do?
Well, it depends on where you are. According to CDC guidance, the federal government put out recently, counties that have substantial or high transmission risk, that is, more than 50 cases per 100,000 residents within a week, you're supposed to wear masks whether you're vaccinated or not anywhere indoors. Some governments have taken that a little farther and said, we're going to bring back the mask requirement in certain areas. So Duluth, Minneapolis, St. Paul, they've all said mask up when you're in city buildings. Many businesses in Duluth and in the Twin Ports have said, yep, put your mask back on. We're going to better safe than sorry, vaccinated or not. So we're seeing a resurgence in mask wearing, just as we're seeing a surge in Delta variant cases, a highly transmissible COVID-19 strain that is spreading, especially among unvaccinated individuals, as the push to get the last chunk of folks vaccinated continues.
And some institutions are demanding that you do get vaxxed.
Yes, it's a matter of your employment for some. So Essentia Health and St. Luke's both this week said that they would require vaccines for all employees, very few exceptions, as a condition of employment. So Essentia and St. Luke's are already, the largest employers in Duluth and in Superior, frankly. The two institutions certainly could send a ripple effect through other businesses, as we've watched around the nation as cities and businesses have started putting in vaccine mandates as they try to get back to work, try to come in person. There's been some pushback with Essentia and St. Luke's, but the health organizations say that the law is on their side and that patient safety is at the forefront of their decision to make sure that all of their employees are vaccinated.
All right. Well, Danny, on the Superior side, the city is looking at getting a big natural gas plant, but maybe not so fast.
Yeah, so the latest on the debate with the $700 million natural gas plant that's being built by La Crosse-based Dairyland Power Cooperative and Duluth-based Minnesota Power is that a petition has been filed by environmental groups and an indigenous group asking the Rural Utility Service for a supplemental environmental assessment of that plant and its emissions and impact on climate change. And this is all due in part because Dairyland Power, which is one of the utilities building it, has asked the federal government to loan it money for its portion of the $700 million proposed gas plant. You know, they're jointly building this Minnesota Power, and they've said that, it, you know, the 625 megawatt gas plant will help be a bridge fuel, basically, to supplement their plans to transition to wind and solar. You know, that it would provide reliable electricity when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing. But environmental groups have contended that we really need to be taking a look at the environmental emissions from this plant, which could produce at least 1.5 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions each year over the next 30 years. And they're citing, you know, new studies that have come out since an environmental assessment was completed by the Rural Utility Service. You know, they previously found that there was no significant impact related to the building of this plant. But now they're saying we need to go back and look at some of the new research that has come out. They're saying that new evidence has come to light, and that needs to be considered before the federal government goes about financing this project.
All right. Well, Superior may not be getting that facility right away anyway, but there could be a significant amount of money from the federal government available to the city in the federal infrastructure bill.
Yeah, the city and really all of Wisconsin, you know, this $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill that was introduced into the U.S. Senate this week could help the state fix its deteriorating roads and bridges and provide money for internet and water infrastructure. You know, it would include $550 billion in new federal spending over the next 5 years for highways, rail, power, electric vehicle charging stations, and money for public transit. And basically, Superior Mayor Jim Payne is saying that this is a really good piece of legislation that he's throwing his support behind because of how it would impact the city. There were a number of things that were included in the bill that could provide resources to the city. Some of those things include funding for inner city rail partnerships. And as you know, there is the Northern Lights Express proposal to bring passenger rail service from the Twin Cities to Duluth Superior. So this could potentially provide funding to get that work going. Also, the legislation would include another $1 billion in funding for a federal Great Lakes cleanup and restoration program over the next 5 years. And Payne has said that that would accelerate work by the city and multiple partners to clean up the St. Louis River. And, you know, it's also going to include, I believe it's $65 billion for expanding high-speed internet. And the city of Superior has been exploring building its own city-owned broadband network. And now, Mayor Payne is saying that potentially through this bill that they would be able to deliver that service faster than ever before. It's something that the city is still discussing. We'll see what happens with that.
All right. And last week we celebrated gymnast Suni Lee from the Twin Cities for her Olympic gold medal. Now the Pride of Rice Lake is also medaled.
Yeah, there's a runner with roots in Rice Lake who won a silver medal at the Summer Olympics in Tokyo. Kenny Bednarik finished the men's 200-meter dash in 19.68 seconds, and that was on Wednesday this week. He finished just 0.06 of a second behind the gold medal winner, Andre DeGrasse of Canada. You know, WPR spoke with his family this week, his mom, Mary Ann, and his sister, Mary Alice, and they were driving to Minneapolis to catch a flight to Florida, where the U.S. Olympic track and field team is hosting gatherings for family members. And basically, they said that, you know, Kenny had started running, you know, just in the second grade, and that this is something that he's been passionate about his whole life. So this is something where he's been really standing out for a long time, and now the whole world knows it too.
All right. You know, first that Canadian haze, now the Canadian runners, but that's okay. We'll take silver. And congratulations to Kenny. And we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Next week on Simply Superior.
My hat has been the hat that was given to me, the Big Top Chautauqua. People always ask me, they go, what is that? And I say, it's such a fun venue, because it really is.
That's comedian Paula Poundstone, who will have on the day before her appearance at Big Top Chautauqua. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Moores and McCumber. Stay safe, everyone.
You think you're broken, but you're strong, right where you belong. No second guessing. It's hard to know what you feel when nothing seems real. And we're all stressing. I beg and I plead for sweet salvation. It comes at such a cost. I think of all we found and lost. I can't stop thinking. Oh, I can't stop thinking. I think about it